Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Mini PC episode 79, Big Talk Small Computers. Door, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, Rich. I want to say crazy because stuff has been nuts. I've been troubleshooting and pounding my head against asphalt trying to get this Rock 64 Nextcloud up and running with an external hard drive. And I had nothing but problems where the drive would spin up, but it would not mount or be mountable even, or even show up in F-disk. But I could put in a little 32 gig thumb drive and it would work just fine for days and days and days. So I was crazy. I was putting myself through pain for nothing. So how have you been?
I'm good. I hate to say it. I'm looking at the links here. There's stuff I put in a long time ago. And I got to remember what we were talking about at the time, or what they were about at the time. But just like you were saying, do you want to finish that story? Because I think that's a worthwhile story to finish.
It's just whenever troubleshooting one-on-one, step back, make sure environments are the same. And first thing you do is compare differences. And the one difference I kept overlooking because I was having this terabyte external drive perfectly mount a Western Digital My Passport, perfectly mount on other Rock 64. I have two Rock 64s, and on one it would mount fine, the other one it wasn't mounting fine. So I finally just stepped back and looked.
So can I ask one question? The hard drive, that's a laptop drive?
I'm sure they are, yeah.
Meaning it doesn't have an external power source?
Right. None of them have external power source. I have multiples. I have I believe it's a 600 gig Western Digital Element USB 3.0. Mm-hmm. And then I have a 1 terabyte Western Digital My Passport, I believe, terabyte drive. And the main reason I bought them was because they didn't have external power. The logic is I connect it to a Pi device. I find a way to have backup power on it. And then voila, I have like a little server with backup power.
So the clever listeners already know what the issue is.
Yes, they do, because they have brains. Where me, I was so upset for days, Rich. The power supply I was using came from another device that only needed 4.5 volts. I don't know what that device was. Maybe it was an orange device. It was an orange device, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And when I plugged it up to this Rock 64, the 4.5 volt was enough for it to properly boot.
So the curse of the barrel connector.
Yes, the frigging barrel connector. I love people who support barrel connectors because I know I'm not right about everything, but to hell with barrel connectors. I never want to use a barrel connector on anything again in my life because I literally now have like 5 different wall warts strewn through my house. And I have no idea what they go to. Well, I know this goes to my Odroid XU4.
All right. So I've got, I don't know how many barrel connectors sitting here. So my, and you're running the IDOD, inner diameter, outer diameter issue on the barrel connector, not only along with the volts and amperage draw on the power supply, because the cool thing with USB, USB-C, whatever it is, all right, fine, it's the same cable. Hopefully the cable flows enough current for you. You just plug the right wall wart in, and then you plug the cable into that, and that end into the device, and you're good to go. Whereas in the barrel connector world, there is no plug standard stuff, you know, like a USB-A connector that goes into the wall wart, and then you just switch them around whenever you want. So I hijacked your story so you can bring it to a conclusion.
Well, no. And so the gimmick was I had a power connector that I believe came with the Rock 64, or I ordered at the same time, that I take back and forth to work as my work computer. That was putting out 5 volt, 3 amp. I have no idea how many amp this thing was putting out, but it was only putting out 4.5 volts. So that half a volt made all the difference in the world. And I was so mad because I installed Nextcloud Pi from the Pine 64 Etcher version of Etcher, and it didn't work. So then I said, well, let me go install Diet Pi, install Nextcloud, blah, 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 blah. It still wouldn't mount the disk. So I was trying even different OSs, and then I booted up the other OS, and I said, okay, those two are based off Armbian. When I go into Diet Pi and I go into Nextcloud Pi and I look at uname-a or whatever, it said Armbian, Debian, Armbian, Debian. And I loaded up the GUI at work and it said Ubuntu. Aha, there's the difference. No, I was an idiot. That wasn't the difference. The difference was the power adapter. I was really upset. So tonight I finally am getting everything up and running.
So specifically, it was the voltage on the power adapter.
I'm going to assume...
Because it was a 4.5 volt, but it could be the amps also.
Well, and that's my logic is it could be both. It could be one. It could be mm-hmm. only the combination causing it. I don't know.
So and for those of you who are new to this kind of thing, if you're running a laptop external drive, meaning something that has a USB 3 connector on it, it's going to require power from the host device to spin the disk. And if you don't have enough volts or amps on the host device, because it may be enough power to run it, maybe enough power to run it and a thumb drive, but it's not going to be enough power to spin the motor on a hard drive. And that's the problem that Dor was running into. I had a different problem.
Well, and I'll say this. I do believe there is a correlation between size of disk and amount of energy needed.
Correct, and RPMs.
Right, right. So if you had a very cheap, 200 gig physical spinning disk, it could have still worked.
So is the title of this episode going to be Size Matters?
I don't know. Well, and here's the thing. Correct me if I'm wrong. SSD size doesn't matter. So if it was a laptop SSD, it could have mm-hmm. basically been any size.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. So you have,
but it's going to use so much less power than a spinning disk that it's just not going to matter.
Well, then I'm upset I didn't get a SSD for this issue, but I digress. It's going to be up and running. There is no built-in chat right now in Nextcloud. They did announce Rocket Chat is coming, so I'm really installing this in hopes that I will get the updates and upgrades. This is not an x86 install. I don't even know if this is a formally supported version of Nextcloud called Nextcloud Pi. I just really hope that I have the availability of Rocket Chat when it becomes available.
You did do a DiaPi install?
I did do a DiaPi install, but why should I use DiaPi when I have Nextcloud Pi? I would think that if it's in the Pine installer and it's called Nextcloud Pi, it should be supported at least by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And, I do have a DiaPi thing up and running here. And when this thing gets up and running, then the Banana Pi Pro will be open, available to do something else with too, which is always good. Even though now that processor is, I want to say, three or four years old, it still has a use case, but enough with that.
But there have been updates to the Banana OS, Bananian, which I'm kind of surprised at.
I want to say the last time I actually loaded it up and SSH'd into it and did a couple command thingies, I want to say it went through like 20 updates, and it still works, but it took, I want to say, like 18 hours.
Oh, geez. Okay. All right. So for the most part, and not throwing anyone under the bus, I do have a Pine Rock Pro 64 or Pro Rock or Rock Pro, however they say, they throw a Pro in there, and I've only smoke tested it. So I want to just give that caveat out there. That I've smoke tested the machine. It's cool. It has all sorts of ports and looks all sorts of fantastic. Lots of promise. I just haven't had any time on target. But my in-process or in the data center, which is, my data center changed a little. The Rock, boy, I'm losing it. The Odroid XU, my superstar. And because it's my superstar, I do almost everything with it. So it's Time Capsule, it's NFS, Plex, and who knows what else, and Dor's holding up his Rock 60, Odroid XU4, sorry. Yep, with the fan in there. So I had a problem with it. It was dying, and, I did apt update, whatever, and I think it was I added a couple of packages. I pulled those off. And then, I'm kind of crazy about backup, and sometimes I break my backup rules, and I'm like, all right, I got to get a backup of the Odroid XU4, and I'll tell you what I love about the Odroid XU4 is you're holding it up and doing your best Vanna White with it. Two USB 3.0 ports. Two. Which, fantastic. That's just absolutely fantastic. So, I app updated, I pulled the old packages off, it seemed a little more stable, but I wasn't able to do the DiaPi backup on it. So you can do DiaPi dash, I believe it's backup is the command. And I'm like, all right, let me just check my disks. I do a df gif space dash h, and that's not coming back. And I'm like, what the heck? You know, and I try to do an ls on /mnt on my mount directory, and it's not coming back. Then I'm like, you know what? Let me just check out my fstab. And I had all sorts of entries in there because I'd plug things in, pull them out, plug things in, pull them out. I had to prune down my, you know, fstab so it was only the hard drives that were plugged into the USB 3.0 ports. And then I was able to do df /h. I was able to ls the mount subdirectory. And lo and behold, after, you know, pulling all the bad entries in the fstab out, I was able to go into DietPy and do a backup of my DietPy. So here's the last time I did a backup, I had an issue with it because I was uploading everything to Google Drive and I was working on my routers and I had no way to get to my, I could have tethered off my phone, but effectively I had no easy way to get to my Google Drive. I have a 256 gig thumb drive that all of my configs are on now. And if I was slightly smarter, instead of being in the center drawer on my desk, it would be in my Fire Safe, but that's where I have it now. So it's MS-DOS formatted, so it plugs into everything and everything can read it, and I've got all of my configs on that now.
Gotcha. Yeah, I will say the Odroid XU4, it is right now, I'll say, the darling for the power it has, but the solidness of all the OSs I've ran on it is, to me, the impressive part. The ROC Pro 64, it's like I was just telling a good friend, the IO, the interfaces on that board right now, and the fact you can get it with 4 gigs of RAM really do make it, I would think, and it's under $100, would make it the board that I would want to develop towards. I don't know, maybe just me. But we do have other boards coming out with the same chip processor on it, which is the real, you know, important part on it. It's the 3399 ROC chip. So we're going to see a lot of boards coming out here in less than the next 6 to 8 months that are going to be at this caliber of processor with better RAM, you know, good RAM, good I/O. But I think this is a really good first board.
Oh, yeah, I think it's fantastic, and I only look forward to the future on these types of things. I don't have the specs up for the board. I know we've done it in prior shows, but if I remember correctly, it's got a couple of display ports on it, right?
Oh, that sounds right. ROC Pro 64. It had a bunch of things. That was the one thing I can never remember, if it had multiple videos or not, because I know that's one of the things you always try to get it. It says mini DSI interface, which I do believe is a video one, and then it has EDP interface. One of them is via a cable, I think, unfortunately.
Well, I think one is like an LCD screen.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm looking on their page, $79.99. Now, where are the specs on this thing? I mean, they have it in a paragraph form here, but usually they have an image with the lines going to it saying, hey, this is that. But having the PCI socket on there, that's very cool.
If you're at this store on a full desktop computer, top gray bar, ROC 64, ROC Pro 64, highlight it, go down and click ROC Pro 64, then you'll get to the classic detailed specs features of the board, because the default place where you go in any search engine seems to be the store.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's where it was.
Yeah, so they basically, you know, it says it can do 4K and 2K 60 frames a second digital video output.
Yeah, that's the HDMI. And you're going to do your best Vanna White with the one you have there?
No, I mean, it's already big put in the back box up. Yes, the the DSI is a touch panel port. So it's a ribbon cable connector where you can do, I believe it's actually two ribbons. One is for the touch, one is for the LCD part. So that it has that built in too. I don't know if I would ever use that, only because my experience with monitors, Rich, and all these mini computers is I cannot fathom how expensive some of these monitors are.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And at that point, you might as well buy a tablet and like Wi-Fi into the device or RDP into it or something like, or VNC into it.
Yeah, and it has a camera port and stuff like that. Where one of the places I could see this board shining, unfortunately, is not the hobbyist agenda, like, you know, thing, but instead people buying a bulk of these, like, you know, a couple thousand of these, putting them inside of a device, say, whether it be a smart camera or some higher end device, where you could have pretty good functionality and flexibility because of all these ports and all the IO, including the mini PCIe slot.
Right, or some sort of kiosk type device.
Yeah. Where you could actually have this thing doing a lot of computing and displaying stuff on that touch panel screen. Honestly, pretty good. And for only $80, my logic is it's probably one of the more versatile ones, including USB-C, which, you mm-hmm. know, that's one of the things that makes me smitten about this board.
All right. So I hate to throw it under the bus. Okay. All right. That's what I remember about it. So if you look at where it says 8, USB 3.0, USB Type-C, DP 1.2. So there is a display port off the USB-C. So that's what the DP is. So you got HDMI and display port on this.
Right. So you still have is it a barrel connector for power?
Yes. That's 4. It's a 5.5 millimeter barrel, 12 volt, 3 amp or 5 amp, depending on, I think it's memory. So as far as I'm concerned, this, if I get it all going right, would be exactly what I've wanted, is basically a thin client desktop, you know, for my home that I plug my two monitors into and just access everything else.
Well, I'll say the only thing that I don't want to say worries me or concerns me is what kind of support are we going to get out of that Type-C video capability, because I don't know how popular that is right now. I don't know where it is right now. Is it in motherboards? I don't know. Is it in other kinds of things? I don't know. If this is like one of, you know, the few places where it's at, I hope it has good support and it doesn't need to be, you know, 4K 60 frames a second quality. As far as I'm concerned, it just has to be good quality.
Yeah, I actually don't have any experience using USB-C as a display port, so I can't speak authoritatively on that.
Yeah, so Ameridroid, I pre-ordered this, I believe, let me buy it without a power brick or a heat sink, so I gotta buy both of them at least. And I will say, I did see there are more than a couple cases on Thingiverse. I think I saw 2 or 3 cases on Thingiverse.
Oh, yeah, I got to troll that and check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using Yegi, Y-E-G-G-I, mm-hmm. for my 3D modeling searches, because it's like a search engine of search engines kind of thing. I'm going to have to buy the power brick and heatsink. I guess I'll try to do that here before too long, because I really do want to see this board up and running. And I don't know, Rich, I've been looking, Explaining Computers. Hello, this is Werder with the bad fingernails from Explaining Computers. That guy?
Yep. With the bad haircut.
That haircut is comical. He's the only one I've seen with this board up and running. The numbers were fine. They weren't fantastic. They weren't crazy. They weren't insane. They were good. They were where he expected them to be and where I expected them to be, I'll say. He's been getting better at his benchmarking. He's been getting a lot better at his benchmarking here in the last couple months. So if you want to see that board up and running, I encourage people to go check it out. I hope it is more responsive than the ROK 64 is what I'm going to say. The ROK 64 is a fine board. Hopefully the ROK Pro 64, it has a more responsive desktop, because that's where it's not great.
Yeah, I did a smoke test video on the board. I'm just checking, because I hate to say it, I shoot a lot of video and then don't get around to editing it. I do believe I did a smoke test on this board, just power it up, show it running. So I didn't do any kind of benchmarking or anything with it.
I do like the idea of you using it as like a desktop, a primary desktop. I was literally talking to somebody else. They have the same dream, is they want their servers over here. They want their big iron over there. They want their, you know, 100 gig box over here or whatever. But they want their main interface to be almost like mainframe-esque, dumb terminal-esque, where it's as light of a mm-hmm. computer as possible, with the multi-monitor, with at least 4 gigs of RAM, with at least a couple IOs to do basic tasks. But he wants all his heavy number crunching to be on back-end computers. A lot of people I find who are tech savvy have that similar kind of thing going on. And I will say, it would be really nice to be able to say all my interfaces are on the crazy cheap stuff. All my work is being done on the back computers.
Right. Yeah, and I guess a couple of things. In technology, a lot of times we talk about levels of abstraction. And the idea is that if I have something, or like my Chromebook here, and I've been definitely, I'm not sure when I first mentioned the Chromebook, but I got an Acer 14-inch Chromebook. It was a holdover at Costco for $200. And I don't edit video on it, but I watch video from all my favorite sources. So whether it's YouTube, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Plex, I don't know what else. So I read and write emails. Pretty much I do everything other than video editing on the thing. And I am super happy. It's super lightweight, got a super good battery. And to me, this is the web top. You know, it gives me that web interface into things. And pretty much at home, everything has a web interface into it, or I can SSH into it. And this gives me that capability. And I'd like that same capability. This is a 14-inch, you know, to support my two big monitors, that with nothing hooked up or whatever, I can just sit down and I've got, you know, an ARM-type device, low-power ARM device, that I can do all of the same things as my Chromebook, but two big monitors, you know, 20-something-inch monitor, and then connect to all of the other things I need, you know, via SSH or whatever it may be, or VNC or RDP. And I'd be super happy with that.
Gotcha. Did you see in the notes, looks like you actually had it highlighted, the Kadas Edge, K-H-A-D-A-S, Edge.
Yeah, let me open that up. I see the, that's line 703.
Yeah, 703. I'll say this. This is from the manufacturer I can't stand. They're the people who did the Kadas Vim, and which I still have, like, sitting right here, literally in the box, not really used.
Well, what is that?
That's the Kadas Vim.
Oh.
This is their other computer, which is basically unusable for a Linux weenie like myself, because the imaging software to put OSs on this is Windows only. There is no other way to put operating systems on the eMMC, which is like baked into the board, other than a Windows computer.
That kind
best
of
thing about it, it's a really nice USB-C cable.
Okie doke. So they say they got the ROC 3399, and Kadas Edge will launch in an Indiegogo mid-October. Email subscribers get 15% off on launch day. So I guess you can click through and get 15% off.
I mean, it definitely sounds nice, and if you let the whole page load, which is definitely not quick, the main header image appears to have like an animation video of two different iterations of the chip, because on one of them, there is no like RAM teeth at the top of the board, and on one of them, there is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's confusing. But I will say it's the same basic processor. Maximum 4 gigs of RAM, eMMC up to 128. I have no idea what HDMI CEC is. I know what HDMI 2.0a is, but not HDMI CEC. And all the rest looks fine, is what I'm going to say. But my logic is, if you can only interface with this, there's the Edge and the Edge V. There you go. Basic $99, the max up to $229. These Ooh. Guys are on drugs.
Oh, okay, all right. So if you scroll down, yeah, I see there's the Edge and the Edge V, and it has like a DIMM connector, like a DIMM memory connector on one, and it looks like it has a 40-row pin header connector, like on a Raspberry Pi, on the other one.
Yeah, I mean,
So there's basic, Pro, and Max. So what's the difference?
Scroll up. You'll see the differences are the RAM and eMMC. The low end is 2 gig of RAM, 16 gig eMMC. The mid range is 4 gig of RAM, 32 gig eMMC. And the high end, still only 4 gigs of RAM, 128 gig eMMC.
So
that's the basic.
Unless the Max does something crazy, why would I want it? I don't need 128 gigs of eMMC.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, definitely, because you could plug anything you wanted to. It's got USB ports.
I know. I would only see doing this literally to support them. There's no other reason I see to spend that much money, because it's literally like almost pushing twice as much. I don't know. I'll say this. I don't like how the Vim is. I'll try to revisit it if I can and see if they now have software to interface with it on a non-Windows computer. But if you still need a Windows computer to put an OS on it, then to me, it's still just a doorstop. I booted it up once and that's it, because it can't do anything else.
All right. So we haven't done a show in a while. And since the last show, I went to VMworld in Vegas. And the reason this will dovetail into this will be apparent in a moment. On their keynote speech, they talked about ESXi, which is their, basically it's SUSE Linux with a custom version of it that runs as the host to virtual machines. And they talked about ARM-based ESXi. And I was super all sorts of excited about it and wasn't able to get a whole lot of information. But I'm looking at something like this with the edge connectors, and you drop them all into a, you know, 1U, 2U unit, and then you've got all sorts of capability for ARM hosting. Now, you got to bump the RAM up, definitely, and you got to have multi-core chips, you know, CPUs. But this is a good start getting there.
Well, I mean, ARM servers have a possible use case where they're really beneficial. The question is the software going to be written for it, and is it going to be optimized and solid and reliable?
Oh, yeah. All good questions.
I don't know. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. VMware has, like, grown ridiculously in value.
Oh, yes.
In like the last 3 years, they have no choice but to keep trying to have that curve going up for, you know, profitability. So which tells me they need to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, scared money don't make no money. So they're spending as much money as they can right now. And if they're doing this kind of stuff where they're pushing ARM technology, more power to them. And competition is good, because there are choices out there if people want to use Hypervisor or something else.
Well, yeah, there's a Hyper-V, which is the Microsoft product. There's KVM, and you know, there's kind of different flavors of KVM out there. So there are different ways of doing it. In fact, you can get SUSE Linux for your... So there's OpenSUSE for the Raspberry Pi, which is a 64-bit OS, and they run, I believe, a version of KVM. So you can actually run virtual machines on that. What I wanted to do, I've got the ROC 64 with 4 gigs of RAM, and I'd love to have a cluster of them. And if I could run VMs, you know, a hypervisor and virtual machines on that, I would be crazy excited, because a lot of times I'm remote and I'd love to be able to spin something up and without, you know, copying it to a micro SD card and plugging it in, you know, a Docker solution cluster, you know, a Docker cluster.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, I honestly know somebody else who went to the conference. I didn't realize it until like 3 days afterwards. And he said that it was insane, the amount of money he said that VMware is going to make in the next year. But at the same token, he's happy that he gets paid because how much he knows about VMware.
Dude, one of the vendor parties I went to, Snoop Dogg performed at. I was like 8 feet away from Snoop Dogg at a party. They wined and dined us. I got like a private booth at one party, and you know, Don Julio bottles of tequila, just anything I wanted. So yeah, a little bit of partying like the rock star, and then I came home.
Well, I mean, you always got to come home sooner or later. That's home. And I'm happy that you're not getting hit with any hurricane stuff, because literally this is the night of it, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. And so the folks in the panhandle, west coast of Florida, are getting beat up good. I am east coast Florida, so I'm Orlando and Jupiter, which is northern Palm Beach. So we just had clouds and rain and wind, so not a big deal, nothing unusual.
Yeah, I'll say, I know Joe Heck is down towards
that area. Oh, shoot, right, yeah.
And And Matt Rainey of Podnuts Pro is Louisiana, which is not too far from there.
You got to say Louisiana.
I can't. I'm a cracker from Maryland, Baltimore. But yeah, so everybody down there, man, just be safe. I love how the news makes it literally sound like a monstrous thing that's going to come in and basically kill everybody in its path.
Well, so the Hughes Compound Southern Command is precast concrete walls that are trucked in and stood up. They might be bulletproof for like 9mm and smaller handgun calibers, but if I heard Cat 4s coming at me, I'd be getting the heck out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to stay put. And even if hypothetically I say I wanted my house, my family, kids and wife, they're definitely not going to be here. I might be stupid enough to stay here. That's called natural selection. But my kids, they, my wife, they got to go. For people who do stay in your house, I just encourage you to stay in your house. Just don't forget, hurricane halfway through, quietness sometimes, and then it comes right back.
Oh,
so,
yeah. I had that experience on Long Island where the eye wall passes and, you know, it's like dead calm, you know, blue sky for about 10 minutes. So don't get baited into it. I have two hurricane videos on my website, YouTube site, which you probably could click through and find it at flyingrich.com and click on one of my YouTube links and find my YouTube site. But if anybody's still worried about hurricane prep, which I believe we're only, even though there's hurricane season ends at the end of November, and I believe we're now in the peak area of hurricanes. So I think October is where the peak amount of hurricanes actually happen.
Gotcha. I remember being at Ocean City, Maryland, where the eye went over, where it was like crazy how peaceful, calm it was. And then you could see it was coming. So you got back indoors.
Yeah, I'm just looking at nhc.noaa.gov. And there's this hurricane spinning around in the Atlantic for like a week, this Hurricane Leslie. And it's currently going to go back to Africa where it started out from. And this Hurricane Mike is looking like it's going to end up as a storm off the coast of England.
Gotcha. Oh, and then here's the other thing, Rich. My old standby is for webcams is the Logitech QuickCam Pro 9000. I want to say it's literally been out now for well over a decade, mm-hmm. at least 8-9 years. It's like webcam technology just stopped.
I was kind of shocked at that.
Same here, but I'll say this camera works fine. I'm sure it's not 4K, blah, 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 blah. But here's the gimmick that I believe. I've read that there is a way in Linux we can basically hack our mass storage driver, aka we just do one copy paste basically, and we can make it to when this camera turns on, the red ring does not light up on the camera. Because mm-hmm. the logic is I want to have this as almost a security camera running off a battery backup off a Raspberry Pi type device somewhere in my house or pointing out outside of a window.
Black
or
electrical tape would work good too.
Well, I know, but if I can hack it, I'm going to hack it first. You know what I mean? I got to try, yep. right? I mean, that's the point of it. But here's the thing I don't like, Rich, is that I have a hard time finding 3D printable mounts for this camera when I would think this camera would be
since
like
it's
one of
the
most versatile kind of mounting. Yeah, it's been around forever, and it's literally flexible into lots of positions.
Mm-hmm.
I would think this thing would be like mount magnet.
Right. Yep.
But it's not.
Well, design your
so
own.
So I just bought two of them. eBay, $10 a piece, $12 a piece, maybe $15 a piece, whatever. It was a steal, you know, and they work and they have mics built in too. Technically speaking, though, in the state of Maryland, if I record video and I'm recording audio, I cannot submit it to a court of law.
Whatever.
I know. I have to have both sides agree to it being audio on.
Right. That's consent, which I understand consent rules, but that's kind of different when it's a surveillance camera. One of the things, and since we're talking about this, I'd love to, there's a gate where you get onto the Hughes Compound Southern Command. I'd love to have a Pi device with a camera doing license plate reading. So then I know who, you know, hey, it's my car, my wife's car, my daughter's car coming onto the property. So then, like, hey, if it's at night, turn the lights on, something, you know, that I can trigger other actions.
Yeah, I know. It's doable. I'll say that. It's definitely doable. You would definitely have to try to find a very optimal angle to where the license plate would be in as much of frame as possible with as little movement as possible for as long as possible, because you want to maximize the chance of getting a clean shot at it.
And there's open license plate software. I think it's OLR or Open License Plate Reader. There's something like that.
I didn't know there was one already out there, because with the Pi thing, it's just a question of, can you get enough consistent frame rate in order to catch the correct frame in clarity with it? So it's going to mean a high frame rate, but it's also going to see, this is where your camera knowledge comes into play, Rich. It has to have the right aperture and
depth of field you're talking about to be able to read it.
Yeah. Well, and the gimmick is you know it's going to be at about X depth, and you want to make sure that you have that aperture, that depth of field set, so that is the optimal place, even though, you know, 99% of the time when the camera's pointing, there's nothing there.
Right.
Yeah. That was the other reason I bought the QuickCam Pro, Rich, is it was one of the last cameras put out by Logitech that had all of the intelligence in the camera itself and did not rely on Windows software to do its work. This is almost like Win modems, right? A lot of webcams you buy are like Win modems, where the camera is very stupid and they offload the brains onto Windows software. So Linux weenies or Raspberry Pi people might have a really hard time.
Are you going to include a link camera in the show notes for that?
Yeah. For the camera? I can, but I just went on eBay and just searched Logitech QuickCam Pro 9000.
Okay.
Bang. I don't know why, but I always remember Logitech QuickCam Pro 9000.
I don't know what Logitech I have running on my Octopi for Octoprint, but yeah, that runs fine. I'm not sure what version that is.
Well, the beautiful thing is there's lots of Logitech cameras that will work fine, you know, perfectly fine. There's only a couple that will not work very well at all on a Pi, and it's because when you hook them up, either the focal point is set to zero, aka nothing's ever in focus, or the white balance will literally wildly go like crazy on the camera, and it's really hard to get a consistent one. And to me, that's the most important thing with a tag reading system is clarity and frame rate and everything, because garbage in, garbage out. You know what I mean?
So I think we got to continue on to line 707 since we're beating the Rock 3399 to death. It's a YouTube video.
What was that line
707
number again?
So it's the Nano PC T4, and so it's a Rock chip 3399, 6-core CPU, Mali 8860 MP4 GPU, 4 gigs of RAM. 4 gigs seems to be the formula here.
Yeah, I will say I am a fan of ETA Prime. He's typically very heavily game focused. That doesn't mean he doesn't know things about mini computers. In fact, he's actually more knowledgeable than most on mini computers, because he's the guy who can take these like 3-quarter size cabinets that come from China, rip them to pieces, actually not put them together, and he used alcohol on the processor to see what kind of processor it was, because they literally sanded off the information. So yeah, he's pretty good. And this is one of the other boards. I'm shocked again at the sizes of these boards, because this is not a big board.
Okay, so it's $109.99, $4 for the heatsink, $3.99 really, $8.99 for the 12 volt 2 amp power supply, another $3 for the acrylic case.
That seems fine prices, I'll say. I would rather every place just put everything together and say, here's the price, instead of you having to piecemeal it.
A la carte it to death, because you know you're going to need the power supply, yeah, the heat sink, and all that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, realistically. That is one small heat sink, too, is what I'll say.
So I'm trying to find information. It said it was a hexa-core, and I want to see that it's all the same cores.
No, it isn't. It isn't the 30, all of the 33, from what I've seen, every single 3399 I've seen is the exact same processor and the exact same processor specs. I'm getting an ad because I'm not on my YouTube premium account on this one. When I jumped up to 627, I thought it was going to tell me the actual chip specs, but I was wrong. Here you go. It's showing when you jump up to 640, core clock 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 408 megahertz up to 1800 megahertz is the range. They're all down to 408 megahertz. I'm pretty sure like four of them can go up to full speed, but two of them cannot. Yeah, it says right there, I'm blind. 639 on this video from ETA Prime, core architecture at the very top line, 4X ARM Cortex A53 processors at 1416 megahertz, so 1416 megahertz, and then two ARM Cortex A72 processors at 1800 megahertz. So the two are the high-end ones. They go up to 1800, 1.8 gigahertz, whatever. And the other ones only go up to 1400. So those are the low power ones.
Okay, so this is the same thing. It has an HDMI port, USB-C display port.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a good looking board, but I am shocked at how cramped everything is. I mean, they load this board.
Oh, and it does have SATA on the back.
Full size SATA?
No, it looks like it looks like an M SATA. It says SATA, but I think it's an M SATA. Yeah, it's an M SATA.
Yeah. M.2 SATA. So that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I want these boards to be under $100 when they're all said and done, but this is, I'll say, close enough right now.
Yep.
Wish it had more USB 3 ports, but you know. Very cool, very cool. Yeah. ETA Prime is one of the guys I encourage people to check out. He does really good videos, really good work.
Outdoor, so you dropped this link. So I'm looking at line 711 and still sticking with the Rock 3399. Because you know me, nothing's good unless I beat it to death. So the title of the article is ESXi on ARM. Yes, ESXi on ARM. VMware teases bare metal hypervisor for 64-bit ARM servers.
Gotcha. Yeah, from the Register. Well, you mentioned it via Voxer, and then I purposely went out and tried to find something on it, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I don't want to bite the hand that feeds me, but there isn't a whole lot out there. If everybody just, you know, went, oh my gosh, I got to have it. Yeah, don't hold your breath.
No, well, now here's the question to me. When I think of the infrastructure for VMware and where this could work, I keep thinking, wow, there's a lot of Zoom ads on this page. Let me get away from there. You can have the ARM processor running the core of the ESX server, but that's not where most of the processing is done, correct? Most of the processing can be offloaded on the SAN and on other hardware in a VM ESXi interface, right? The same processor running your management of the whole infrastructure, that can be on different hardware than what's affected by the spun up servers.
Correct? Well, all right. So the ESXi is the host for the guest OSs. And in the VMware world, the vSphere or the vCenter manages all of them. And that can also be an appliance, as they call it, which is basically another VM. So you do split off storage, and with NSX, that's their software-defined networking. So a lot of that's still happening in the CPU. And right now, that's an Intel CPU that VMware is working on. So the ESXi host is, you know, the host for the virtual machines, the guest operating systems running on it. And your SANs and NASs and all of that bit, that's just storage. That's just like the hard drive and the machine. So they don't do any computing.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, because of that, I don't see why they couldn't, shouldn't, or wouldn't look at putting it on different chips.
Yeah, I guess it really just is compiling the code for that hardware type, you know, getting all of that done right.
Gotcha, gotcha. I remember the one time talking to, I believe it was Mad Dog Hall, who basically said, hardware's stupid. Hardware is easy. Like, anybody can just sit at a thing and punch out hardware. Hardware is, you know, once they design it, it's done. You know, they just stamp it out and just stamp it out, just stamp it out. He said, software, that's where the magic happens. And that's what really matters, because you can take crappy hardware, put really good software on it, and have it actually be reliable and work good. He said, you can take the best hardware in the world, you put crappy software on it, and it's going to be a miserable experience. The problem is, software requires more investment than I think a lot of companies at least initially want to do, so that they only do just enough, it seems like. Yeah, and I'll say, and he did say, you know, sometimes software is good enough and doesn't need more upgrades. While I will say that might not be a popular stance, I've seen it, at least in my time, where there was a piece of software that really should not have got an upgrade. Don't know why it got an upgrade. It was like they got an upgrade just so they could charge more money for stuff. So I'm a firm believer there is such thing as good enough software where you don't need to keep upgrading for the sake of upgrading.
Yeah, and actually, I did the wrong introduction to that because I missed the line number. So it wasn't a ROC 3399 story. But the NanoPi Neo 4 is the cheapest and smallest RK3399 board. And that one is line 723. So I'm looking for the price.
This is not the soft. This is not the same board that ETA Prime was just talking about.
$45.
But it is made by the same company. So it is made by the same company, NanoPC. This is definitely different. Much, much smaller. Much, much less ports. But does have a gig Ethernet. Does have at least one USB 3.
Looks like USB-C.
Yeah, and it has a socket for eMMC. That scares me just a touch. And Type-C, yeah.
So Type-C power and data. It doesn't say display. But, all right, so what I need to know is the lowest end, is it the 1 gig of RAM is $45? What's the 4 gig of RAM cost?
Don't know. I will say I am liking the look of this board, and I am shocked. I'm generally shocked at how tiny this thing is. Yeah, and there was the heatsink that Explaining Computers got, it might have been for the ROC Pro, was this same kind where if you scroll down, Rich, and you see it, the heatsink is like a huge brick. It's like the size of the entire board. Have you seen that before?
What board did that? One of the boards I had, I think it was an Odroid. One of the earlier Odroids did that. Oh, wait. I know what it was. It was the, who was the super small Intel board?
The upboard?
Yeah, the upboard, I think, right?
Well, my upboard, it wasn't the entirety of the board like it is in the picture there. It was close, I will say. It was damn close. But the holes on the side where they're round holes.
Oh, I thought that was
actually
a case. That's a heat sink?
That's a heat sink. And those holes on the one side that are round, they're actually screw holes. It makes it like crazily mountable.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. It might have been Explaining Computers. I don't think it was ETA Prime. I think it was Explaining Computers, where he had a board that had the exact same type of mount, where I'm looking at that thing thinking, that's not a heat sink. He says a heat sink. There's no way that's a heat sink. He called it a heat sink. And then he connected the board. I'm like, holy crap, it's a heat sink.
Okay, so the looks like the 1 gig of RAM version is $45 and available now.
What you waiting for?
I'd rather have a 4 gig of RAM.
So where on the page did you click? Oh, there.
Yeah,
it is.
I clicked through.
Friendly Elec. Maybe they don't have a version with more RAM?
Well, the article said, you know, mentioned 2 and 4 gigs. I don't know if it was saying in comparison to, or they have those versions. Okay, so the sentence is, if you plan to use this board as a low-cost Linux mini PC, ideally I'd recommend a board with 2 gig or 4 gig of RAM, instead, such as the friendly Elec's own NanoPi M4. Okay, so they're saying or the Pine 64 or the Rock Pro 64 from Pine. That's what they said. All right.
Yeah. I mean, 1 gig of RAM isn't bad. Let's be fair. For $45, 1 gig of RAM is a perfectly acceptable thing. Honestly, I worry because it's friendly ARM computer. I'm afraid that if I click through, it's going to be $20 shipping.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I'm now going through the cart. United States, region state, Maryland, postal zip code, 21061. That's not my zip code. $3 China Post, $14 DHL Express, $17 UPS Express. So
for under $4, you can get it.
Yes, but I'm really terrified how long that would take versus the $14 one.
Now, the way I'm getting to things, it wouldn't matter.
You're not the first person who said that to me in the last week. Like, what's the rush? I'm so busy. I ain't going to have any time to play with this. Okay, so $3 is not bad. $3 is good for $40. I will admit that.
At that rate, I would order one.
Well, go ahead.
And I'll tell you, you know why I'm not clicking and put my foot in my mouth? You know why I'm not clicking order?
Why?
Because I got to finish reviewing a couple of other boards before I get onto this.
That's fair. My excuse is I got to get this Rock 64 NextCloud instance up and running. Once I get that up and running, I got to buy the heatsink and power adapter for the Rock Pro 64. The question is once I get that up and running, if that's not my desktop in my pocket, I don't know what my use case is going to be for it. Because I already have my OctoPrint running on a actual Raspberry Pi in the other room, and it's been running fine for now. It's been running good. I have the camera. I want to do some sort of surveillance thing with it. I don't need a full crazy board for that. I can literally use an Orange Pi for that, is logic. Okay, so you got boards to test. I have Rock Pros to finish. Man, these 33, these boards are literally coming out like insane, and that was one thing I told my buddy. The Rock Chip 3399s are going to be every frigging where. It's crazy how they're going to be everywhere. And the one thing I'll say is, and I said this before, I don't know if you remember this, Rich, the mini computing world is seeing revolutions, evolutions, is seeing good things happening in the world. But we are the benefactors of, right now, I'll say two things. We are benefactors of mobile phones. If they design something in a mobile phone, that means they already have the production facility available to put something in a very small, compact space. We're mini computers. You know, we benefit from that. We benefit from that back-end production run, but also cube satellites or miniature satellites that they're making, because they're so cheap to shoot up. They can order so many. They literally have helped build infrastructure for mini computers. So with that said, the first phone with 10 gigs of RAM is going to be announced here before the end of the year. We're not going to get it in the US, of course, ever. But because they're going to make a phone with 10 gigs of RAM tells me we are going to soon have boards with more than 4 gigs of RAM. Because if you notice, right now we're getting more than a couple with 4. So the next jump is either going to be 6 or 8. And if we do get 6, my logic is we're very quickly there, shortly thereafter, be at 8. So by this time next year, I'm expecting to have that like 3399 chip really honed, working really good. And we're going to start seeing boards with 8 gigs of RAM, you know, the PCIe, good interfaces on boards, and hopefully less than $130. That's my goal. But I don't know how we're going to make out, but I do know this time next year, it's just going to keep getting more and more exciting in the world of mini PCs.
Oh, yeah, I definitely see that coming. And you've said this before, that the most popular processor on the planet is the ARM processor. And Samsung is making the majority of all of them. They're making more processors than Intel or AMD. So all of the technology that's getting developed is happening within them. And all of the innovation should be happening within them. I'm going to kind of trash, I hate doing this, but 719 is a Pi hat. So it's a Pro Ethernet hat with a fan for $20. I guess if you make any kind of a product, $20 is a reasonable price. the power over Ethernet for a Pi has been just super lame. And there's a real cheesy way to do this, and it's I've had a couple of devices that did it. So basically a socket, you have a Cat5 socket that you plug the Cat5 wire into, and then that has a wire coming out of it and a pigtail for the power connector. And something like that, you can find that online, you know, power over Ethernet adapters to do something like that, and it would cost you next to nothing. And you could strip the wires and solder it on if you're not handy. But look, if you want PoE and a fan for your Raspberry Pi, I guess it's a good deal. But yeah, the Raspberry Pi isn't PoE friendly, and that's the sad part of it.
Okay, there's not great pictures of this board. Where I'm looking at the board, there's the one screw hole in the bottom left, the fan top middle. What the hell is going on the top right, Rich?
Oh,
it looks like
that,
coils of copper out in the open.
Yeah, that's a coil. So the power over Ethernet spec, if I'm correct from my memory, is 48 volts, and the Raspberry Pi runs 5 volts. So that may be a DC to DC converter. Basically a transformer. I shouldn't say DC-DC converter is an integrated circuit. Coils like that are a transformer.
I mean, I don't know nothing about nothing.
Okay, so
I know this don't
if
look
you
good. This does not
look
good.
At the third paragraph under the picture there, it says the Raspberry Pi PoE hat features a fully isolated switch mode power supply with 37 to 57 volt DC class 2 input, 5 volt 2 amp output. So that is what it is. So here's for those of you that aren't electrical engineers, and the people that are electrical engineers are going to cringe at what I say. There's a voltage and amperage issue. So Cat5 or any kind of category Ethernet is fairly thin wire. So if you wanted to push 5 volts down that wire, you'd get near no amperage. And that's why they're pumping up to 57 volts. I believe the standard is 48 volts. Down the wires, so you can drop it down to something like 5 volts, 12 volts, and get a sufficient amount of amperage to actually run a device. And they do the same thing with tethered drones. So if you want a drone to go up 1,000 feet and maybe act as an antenna or, you know, video surveillance or something like that, you can't have it going with jumper cables for your car. You have to have it with a hair fine wire. So some of these things, they're pushing 200, 400 volts up, and then they'll do a DC to DC conversion and drop it down in a similar fashion so they have the correct voltage and enough amps to run the motors of the drone. And that's what's going on here with, you know, Cat5, Cat6 cabling.
Yeah, I'll just say this board does not look desirable to me. It just doesn't look clean. It doesn't look nice.
Yeah, it doesn't have curb appeal.
Gotcha, Rich. Well, I'm going to end the show. I'll say, guys need to email us. I'll say this, minipcshow@podnos.com. I don't know what the hell's going on with that email. I see an email in there from 5150. So thanks for the email, 5150. But it was almost like a riddle. He said, watch this video and at 3 minutes and whatever seconds, you might get interested. I don't know. And I'm sure there were other emails that I could not identify as being real emails. I need to get that email working right. I'll say, if you need to contact us right now, we are still on Google Plus. And if you, as a listener, want us to go to a different network, let us know. I will say, literally, if 300 people come out and say, we want you on Facebook, I will go on Facebook. I won't like it, but I'll go on Facebook. If you want us on Mastodon, there's going to need to be a lot of you. If you want us on MeWe, there's going to need to be a lot of you. But you got to let your voices be known. Go to Google Plus, let us know, or mail at podnos.com, or we can go to flyingrich.com.
Yep, flyingrich.com. That's all my social media and the contact page, so you can click contact. And I did have 1,000 subscriber giveaway on my YouTube channel. I gave away 2 routers, and I'm trying to figure out what to do for 5,000 subscribers. So if you have a suggestion, let me know.
Very cool, very cool. I want to thank you, Rich. Thank Brian. Hope everything's going well, Brian. I know family stuff, kid stuff, always equals pain. But c'est la vie, such is life. I'll talk to everyone again real soon, and thanks everyone for the support.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.